Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Adrian, and I am joined by both Sarah and Mitch. How are we doing, guys?
Hey, good. How are you?
Hey, doing very well.
Good. We're also joined by two very special guests. We have Adam Hill and Ben Pinchback of the Motor City Gameworks fame and fortune. guys, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us. Super excited to be here. Just for the listeners, this is Ben here, Pinchback, and I'm really excited to be here and talk to y'all. Thanks again for having us.
That's right. And this is Adam. Thanks so much. And greetings from snowy Detroit.
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's snowy. It's we got like a foot of snow up here the other day. It's just terrible. Just terrible.
So
good weather for board games, though.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. If you're gonna you can move to other cities where they don't have snow.
No, I know that's what we say. Why do we live where the air hurts my face?
I can see all those games behind you, though. I wouldn't mind being snowed in and having access to all those.
Is there any regular favorite?
A large family, so. Well, I've got five kids, 12 and under, actually. So the family favorites are pretty light these days. We've been playing a throwback a ton. Do you remember Karuba from 5 or 6 mm-hmm. years ago, Rudiger Dorn?
Yes.
Just love Rudiger Dorn. Like, we also love Vegas the Dice game, Karuba just gets a ton of play. We actually love all those games where you flip the thing and everyone does the same thing. Like Karuba and Silver and Gold and Number 9 and the old Kinesia Fits, that's like the Tetris one we've been playing a lot. So, you know, with the family, those just work well because everyone can just play simultaneous and kind of do their own thing. They're non-confrontational, and then you just have a good time seeing what everybody did with what flipped. So those are all the family favorites recently with us.
I went over to Ben's house recently and got absolutely crushed by his kids in Karuba. it wasn't close. Like, I thought I was doing well. I was not doing well. That's what I found out. Yeah. I was getting beat by 2 12-year-olds. Like, I was getting crushed in Karuba.
That's a familiar story. I think we've all been there.
We all go through that. Is that a thing, though? Is Ben secretly, like, training them up to crush you just at Karuba?
I think that's the primary game that he's working on them with. And I know you can't be good at Can't Stop, but I just want to throw this out there. I've never beat his kids at Can't Stop. Like, yeah. I get it that there's no, like, practicing that game or, like, strategy. Like, but they have beat me every time we've played
Weighted Can't Stop, dice so. Or something. Something dodgy going on.
It's just brutal. And so that happens. Meanwhile, I have a 15-year-old Cooper. Who is my son, and he prefers video games to board games. I've written him out of the will at this point. And so we'll see what we can do. But he's great. And actually, we've really fallen in love with some Fantasy Realms lately. We're playing a lot of that. He enjoys that.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Nice. Yeah.
That's super popular.
My son is the same. He prefers the video games as well, but I do try and get him into those card games. Like, I bought Marvel Champions because I was like, oh, here we go. You know, the right theme. Right, so we find our ways to try and bring them in.
Funnily enough, my two sons, I have an 18 and a 14-year-old, and they don't really like gaming because they'll much rather play video games. But my daughter, who's 11 going on 12, she will quite happily come in and sit down and play a few games with me. So she's my gaming partner by far. And now my older sons are starting to go, what do you mean Layla plays with you more? We play with you. And I'm like, not even close to the amount of times Layla plays with me, man. Then she's got you beat for sure.
That's a good idea. Use the sibling rivalry thing.
Yeah.
Layla is, like, so good at bluffing too. Like, I remember with Skull, she was so good. I couldn't pick what she was doing.
You don't expect someone that age to be that, you know, cunning and deceptive.
Yeah.
Well, she is a kitty.
We've been playing. This is funny to say. There's an old big box game from when I was a kid called 13 Dead End Drive, and I've been tweeting about it incessantly because my daughter, who's 8, got it for Christmas, and I'm like, oh, we'll put this together. If you don't remember, it's got like the bookshelf that falls on people and they get flying down the stairs, or people disappear in the fireplace, or the chandelier falls on you. And I thought this game, like, I don't really remember it other than it's fun to drop obstacles on people, but it's actually pretty darn good. Like, you have hidden characters, so nobody knows who you are of the 12, and you're trying to move the hidden characters around and knock off the other people while, you know, yourself, you sneak out. So, like, I was actually kind of shocked at how fun it was, and we've kind of been playing it nonstop. And I'm thinking, like, Adam, it would be hilarious with, like, Kirkman and those people to, at a convention, take it way too serious and just trash talk it the whole time. Like, it's pretty fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It looked great. Every time you've taken pictures of it and tweeted about it, I've gone and researched and looked it up. It looks like it's a blast. I would love to play it. Like, and with your family, it would be super fun, but also I think it'd be fun with a bunch of us taking it way too seriously. Sort of like we took Slide Quest to a whole new level.
Absolutely.
With that seriousness. That was a sacred moment with that team.
Really? A sacred moment?
Yeah.
That was what we like to call thin space between heaven and earth right there. It was so close. It was great. We got to level 19.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then we willed it and it just couldn't get through level 19. And we knew, I think, as we were putting it in the box, that we were never going to recreate that moment.
That magic wasn't going to happen again.
I think we only got to about level 10 or 11 before, you know, people were getting knives out for each other. The teamwork started to crack.
I've since learned that if you play it with younger people and siblings, they simply start blaming each other immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas when I was playing it with adults, I was like, this is the funnest game ever. Because we're all like, oh man, we can do this. We can do this. And I don't know if you've ever played anything with Ben or our buddy Dan, but they get really into a game, especially when it's co-op and teamwork. Like they were giving coach speeches. Like I felt like it was like, I mean, like it was transcendent.
Intense.
Like I was inspired. I was inspired at one point. And you didn't want to let your teammates down at that point.
Well, yeah, at one point, my brother paused the game and gave like a 5-minute –
like you're Aragorn.
Exactly.
At the end of the ring.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Great game.
So, guys, so you do the Motor City Gameworks podcast. So a question on that. It's interesting that you guys are game designers, but now you've decided to do the podcast as well. Is it something that you, like a podcast was something you wanted to do on a personal level? Was it something extra to the gaming, a little bit of on the side self-promotion? Where did the motivation come for that?
It really did come out of just kind of shameless promotion. When we started the publishing company, we're kind of copying some, you know, the playbook, as it were, of some of our friends, Dice Hate Me Games. From when we first started the hobby, Chris Kirkman with Dice Hate Me and like TC and Daryl Louder and that crew, those were some of the like first friends we made in the industry. And we really looked up to that crew and they're really good friends to this day. But they kind of set the groundwork of, you know, they had the podcast and the publishing company and they kind of really dovetailed well with each other and it kind of became this brand. So frankly, we were just copying our friends who had kind of a successful game plan. And the thing is, podcasting is, it's free, you know, quote unquote, once you have the equipment, you know, some mics and recorder. And Adam had already paid for a year of web hosting, you know, so we had kind of had a website to host it on. And it, you know, fundamental, and I was a musician, you know, when I was younger, still am, but I have no time. So I had the equipment anyway to do it. So, you know, it was like free promotion and frankly, fun to do. I like talking and hanging out. It gives us an excuse to at least once a month to get together in person and hang out and get to talk to each other. And Adam and I drug Matt Riddle in kicking and screaming. You know, he didn't really want to do it. But we said, hey, Matt, you won't have to do any work. You'll just have to show up and talk. And he was like, all right, you know, I guess I can do that. Is that pretty accurate, Adam? Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, the thing about Matt is Matt's the one of us who did like, he was like a radio DJ.
Yeah, he was.
Like, as an actual job. And like, right. He really did that as a job. And so like, he's kind of got the voice and he knows when to like come in, and every now and then he'll drop into like smooth jazz 94.7. No, but he's actually the one who's probably most comfortable in the situation, but he was just like, fine, but I'm not doing any of the work.
So that kind of led to our format where I do like a page of show notes, but I never share it with those two guys. So they come in cold and I just surprise them with topics. And especially Adam, we like to put on the spot and try to embarrass them. And it's kind of funny because he's probably the funniest friend I have. I mean, he's actually a relatively new friend. We've been friends 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. But he's probably the funniest, literally the funniest friend I have. And it's even funnier when we put him on the spot and try to embarrass him. And that, between that and the air frying, we shouldn't even talk about games. It really should be the Motor City Gameworks air frying and try to embarrass Adam podcast.
Motor City Fryworks.
It works out.
That's right. That's right.
That's our restaurant. We're going to come out with that soon.
another way to self-promote. That's great. I love it.
That's right.
We were talking a bit before the show about how we also have that in common. We all like board games. We all like food, obviously, because you got the air frying thing. And I think I'm now convinced that we should actually talk about barbecuing at some point on our podcast, because it seems to be going well for you guys.
Absolutely.
It goes well. People love the air fryers. Now, they ask me, what's the difference between that and my convection oven? And I'm like, nothing.
It's smaller. It sits on your countertop.
Packaging.
Yes.
It's smaller and it's easier to clean, but that's about it. Well, other than that, it's...
I don't know about you, but for me, that easy to clean part, that's already a huge tick.
Absolutely.
I got to say, I did get into the air fryer market after listening to you guys on the podcast. I was a convert completely. I didn't have one. I was, what is this air fryer nonsense? I have to check this out.
Yeah, all right, so, you guys need to start manufacturing one of those as well.
Exactly.
We need to get a branded
one.
We need to get an endorsement.
We need at least a sponsorship, an endorsement.
Yeah,
we need something.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So while we're on that, you do talk about games a bit on your podcast, but I think one thing I'd like to clear up is Spumoni cookies.
Right.
Now there was the cookie draft. Do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown on the cookie draft and the Spumoni controversy?
Here's the deal: we got asked by Ben to do a little bit of a cookie draft for holiday cookies. Now I want to be clear about this: none of what Ben chose is a cookie. Not a one of them is an actual cookie. I chose cookies, and here's the deal: could I have just said I like chocolate chip cookies? Yes. And that's fine. But I chose the ones I specifically see at the holidays. All right. So I followed the theme and then got pounded for 40 minutes because I chose an Italian dessert cookie called the Spumoni cookie. Now, a Spumoni cookie is shortbread that has been made and it has 3 flavors. So it's kind of like Neapolitan ice cream. Yeah. Only these flavors are better together than the Neapolitan ice cream flavors. Okay. So you get cherry, then you get chocolate, and then you get pistachio. Now, if you're not a fan of pistachios, obviously.
So do y'all have these cookies? Do y'all have these cookies? All right.
No,
you might have them. You've just never noticed. You got to go to the corner where all the desserts are that nobody's eating. Look there for the 3 colored cookie.
And you'll find me. Just look for me. I'll be there enjoying all of them. And they go great with coffee. They go great with tea. They go great with everything. They're good by themselves.
Mm.
They're fantastic. And Ben's sleeping on them. And they gave me that business pretty hard. But the truth is, nothing Ben chose was a cookie.
Mm.
He was like, mini cheesecake. And I was like, that's not a cookie.
That's
a circle.
This one. I think I'm going to go to Adam on this one. A mini cheesecake is a mini cheesecake. It's in the name. It's not a cookie.
Yes.
But it's on the cookie platter after dinner. It's on the cookie platter.
And someone asked if there was a slice of pizza on the cookie platter, would it count as a cookie? And Ben, knowing he's defeated, says, well, yeah.
Garbage. A pizza cookie. I got to say this. Listening to your show and the way you guys talk about the foods and stuff and argue about the cookies, I would like to, after this, the year on this show, is send you Australia's finest delicacy. I don't know if any of you have ever tried it before. But Vegemite.
I'm really worried that you're going to say Vegemite.
Vegemite.
Yeah, why are you saying
that? Has to be tried.
You're being cruel. We could send them Tim Tams.
With cookies, Tim Tams is Australia's best cookie. I don't know if you've ever had a Tim Tam before.
We'll send you a chaser of Tim Tams so that after the Vegemite.
I've had both of these. Tim Tams, I'm down with.
Yeah.
Vegemite, I'm going to be honest, you can keep that. You don't need to pay the postage. If I just want to go and take a spoonful of yeast and eat that, I can.
But see, this is where a lot of folks from the US make a mistake. See, we had to teach Jesse and Jan from Quackalope how to eat Vegemite properly. We've made a video and put it on our YouTube channel.
Mitch did a tutorial video for eating Vegemite.
The how to eat Vegemite guide. From the board game barbecue. If you're eating it with a spoon, you've already done it the wrong way.
No. I had to spread it on some toast. Because there was an Australian young lady that had come over and was here during college, and she was really working hard to make me like Vegemite. And I appreciate her efforts, but I'm going to pass on that. It is not for me. However, I had a question for y'all.
Yeah.
And that is, since you are the board game barbecue, what is your favorite food to eat at a barbecue?
Oh, man.
Oh, that's a tough one.
It used to be steak for me, but I don't eat meat anymore. Right there.
So an Australian barbecue is different to your traditional sort of Texan barbecue that you guys are probably used to over there. Aussie barbecues, you've got your prawns, aka shrimp, on the barbie. You've got your snags, which are your sausages, your steaks, maybe a rissole every now and again, depending on what you're having. But I don't know if
they know what a rissole is, Mitch.
Do you guys have rissoles? So rissole's like a hamburger patty.
It's like a fake burger. It's nowhere near as good as a burger.
You don't eat them on a burger. It's like a roll. It's like a ball, flattened ball of mince with herbs and spices and stuff in it.
Got like so stuffing like a, in it too, right? I think they
is it like a meatloaf burger?
Yeah, like a meatloaf burger. That's what
it keeps getting better. Yes. The more you talk, the more I want one. Especially when you're like, it has stuffing in it. I'm like, yeah, and then next thing you tell me, there's gravy on it. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in.
Gravy? You put gravy on it? It's like a big meatball with, it's breaded with spices and herbs. A
flattened meatball.
Yeah.
I don't see the problem. I want one of those.
And what sides? What sides are there at an Australian barbecue?
Well, this is the thing.
Y'all do potato salad and like
yes. I love a potato salad. Put lots of herbs in my potato salad, like fresh mint in there. It's real good. But I also do a side of, I usually put bread on the barbecue. Like I'll make it like a fiery bread and I'll put, I'll do like a garlic and herb sort of thing going on. Yeah. That is amazing as a side at a barbecue. Mm. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
But a classic Australian tradition is we have these hardware stores, which is kind of like your Home Depot, I think, over there. And they do every weekend, they're called Bunnings over here. And every weekend at the Bunnings, they'll have a local charity who are doing, raising money for whatever charity they're with. And they'll do what we call a sausage sizzle.
Isn't that cute?
Sausage alliteration and everything.
Yeah, sausage sizzle at Bunnings. You get a slice of bread, white bread, with your snag in the middle, bit of barbecued onions, grilled onions, and some tomato sauce or ketchup, and bang, that's
two slices of bread, and it's like white bread. It's like the whitest bread, like the cheap, nasty bread. Yeah.
Oh, that's so. If we're comparing, you throw a hot dog on a piece of bread. That's poor folks living. People don't know that struggle until you've eaten a hot dog on a normal piece of bread. That's the real deal right there.
But I'm just saying, we're in Detroit. We just said we got a foot of snow. It's freezing. Our face hurts when we're outside. Y'all have your windows open. It's sunny and beautiful. You're talking about stuffing and meat bowls on the barbecue, garlic bread and sausages at the local hardware store. I'm like, we're in the wrong place, Adam. We are not in the right place.
Good. It's pretty good.
We need to move. Motor City Gameworks is moving.
Is there a city in Australia that has a name like the Motor City?
Oh,
Not really. And I think, what was it, a couple of years ago, they just General Motors and Toyota just left. They used to have a manufacturing plant in the south of our country, down in Adelaide, and they've just packed them up and moved out of Australia. So now there's no car manufacturing at all over here anymore. It's all gone.
It would have been Adelaide. Would have been Adelaide, but
all right,
it's all gone now.
I didn't know if there was a nickname, like because like Nashville, Tennessee is the music city.
Yeah. You guys, you
know,
have pizza.
I didn't know if there was a city with a nickname, because we could jump in there and be like, you know, that city.
Let's just start one. There's plenty of room left.
I know Sydney people who are like, this is the best city, but I'm not sure that that's really the same thing.
Yeah, let's name it after that meatball sausage ball, like
Rissole City.
Yeah. The Rissole City. Rissole City Games is coming your way.
Feel free to use that. You all awesome. Can start Rissole City Games. Just give Adam credit. Feel free to use that.
First three times you have to give me credit. After that, it's just yours. It's fine.
Excellent. Excellent.
We just have some internet connectivity problems down here. That's the only thing. If you moved here.
That's right.
We didn't mention that, but yeah, Adrian is Adrian is no more. Adrian did leave a question here for you guys, and it was, and I don't know what this means. It says, I have a question about the blip.
Okay.
Do you know what that means?
No.
No.
I do in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I'm not sure.
I really wanted to know the answer to this question that I don't understand from Adrian, but we'll have to get him back.
That was the whole question?
That's the whole question.
I'll have to explain the blip. See, Thanos snapped his fingers and half the population went away. But then 5 years later, the Avengers brought everybody back. I'm sorry, if you haven't seen the... Spoilers.
And yes, that's a child's solution to a major problem. Don't worry about that. If you just took the Earth and said that, you know, when was the last time the Earth was half its current population? That's 1970. All right.
So yeah, not even that long ago. Hey,
Thanos snaps his fingers to save us 50 years. Like,
we're going to catch up again soon.
A better solution would have been to use all those like rings to like make us half as big. Because then we would consume half as much. Like, I don't know. Like, there are way better
solutions. Make us all vegans or something?
Yeah, something. He snapped his fingers and took us back 50 years. Thanks, Thanos.
Thanks for the trouble.
Didn't do a whole lot. Yeah. So, Adam, Drawcast, can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what that was and how that
That's a deep cut. In my real life, one of the things that I do is I am I'm a pastor at a church, and I also work with some nonprofits. And there's this really awesome nonprofit that was started by my buddy Greg Martin called Disaster Relief at Work. Okay, and this is DRAW. And basically, it's a group that whenever there's a disaster, a natural disaster, whether it's floods or tornadoes or earthquakes or whatever, and those happen increasingly, anywhere in the States, he immediately gets a group of people that go down there, and they immediately respond and put boots on the grounds and start helping people clean up. And kind of the thing that they're known for is buckets. And so they take those, you know, those buckets you can buy at like the hardware store that are like 5 gallon buckets, just plastic buckets. Mm-hmm. Yep. They have all of these different like recipes that groups can like contribute to. And like, so there may be a tornado cleanup bucket that has exactly the kind of supplies that are best and most useful for cleaning up people's homes after a tornado, as opposed to a flood. And so there's the flood bucket, there's the tornado bucket, there's the earthquake bucket. And they take semis full of these buckets and just start passing them out to the people that have just been affected by the disaster. So one of the things that they did was they started a podcast. And I was one of the co-hosts of that podcast, me and Greg and a couple other folks, that we would take something random that was kind of our focus area. And my focus area ended up being creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that makes sense.
DRAW was sort of this place where, weather, because natural disasters of course relate to weather, different kind of generational things because a lot of young people are really active in supporting nonprofits like this. They're willing to just kind of immediately jump on a car, jump on a truck, and run down and help people. I was kind of doing the creative thing because entrepreneurship and starting businesses and also just art and expression. And so my area was creativity and art and expression. And so I had a podcast where we talked about that, and I would bring in different musicians and talk with them talk about game design, talk about all kinds of stuff, just different ways to express ourselves creatively and encourage people to do that.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's such a great idea too. Like, I would never have thought to have that idea to take the buckets and the different things that people need. That's awesome.
So hold on, Adam. Let me get this straight. You started a podcast all centralized around mobilizing people to help others who were victims of natural disasters in this altruistic thing. I started a podcast to shamelessly promote our board game publishing company.
Yes.
Yeah, six okay, and one, half dozen the other, right?
Yeah, I just want to get that
short
out
answer,
there. Okay.
Short answer no is yes, that's what happened. No judgment. And I can tell you which one is still being listened to. Dropcast is no longer on the air, but Motor City Gameworks is still making it happen.
Buying games is a serious thing. And if you're serious about games, then you'll check out 2D6 Games. Dan, Dave, and Joe will go above and beyond to make sure your gaming needs are all sorted. They have a great range, and they also provide free shipping Australia-wide. They do loads of work within the gaming community. They help us out immensely with our Brisbane Game Days, and they've even helped us pull off some great pranks against other podcast members. Head over to 2d6games.com.au and check them out today.
Oh, no.
Okay. So we should probably talk a little bit about games at some point.
Absolutely.
And I believe you gentlemen have a new game coming up soon that is about to hit Kickstarter. I'm not going to say when. You guys can tell us if you have a date or not. But the third in the Loaded Roller Ride series, Motor City. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I'll let Adam go in a second because he was kind of the lead designer on this one, but I'll just throw it out there. Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, but March 9th, right, coming to Kickstarter. And like yep. You said, Mitch, number three in what we call the Loaded Roll and Write series, which number one was Fleet the Dice Game with actually Eagle Griffin Games, our good friends over there. And then number two, Three Sisters, and then Motor City, Adam. I know y'all have talked about it a little, you know, before, but, you know, give the elevator pitch there, Adam.
All right. In Motor City, basically, it's a true Euro game that uses Roll and Write as its primary mechanisms, but it's a Euro game. And so if you like Euro games that have multiple paths to victory and a little more strategy to them, this is one for you. And so in this Roll and Write, you control an up-and-coming car company, an automotive company, and you want to try and reach into the market. And so you're going to have to make sure that you're making the choices with regard to the way that you test your vehicles, with the engineering that you put into them, with production models, and then also your sales. And so you're kind of running the whole operation, trying to score the most points. And it's got a couple of really neat things to it. Each of your dice, there's a draft because we of course, it's a roll and write. And so there's a dice draft that's pretty ingenious where you choose a die and it gives you a bonus and then a base action, and then you use it to take a third action. So you're doing like three things with each die. There's a small bonus and then two actions on the die. And so there's some strategy to it. When do you want things to hit? How do you want those combos to roll out? And in some ways, that makes it a little more distinct from the previous two that we've done, because it really is this sort of unique approach to the roll and write genre that's a little more strategic than some of the others have been in terms of what it's capable of doing as a game. And so we're really excited about that. Well, it'll be interesting to see how people respond to it, because I'll be honest with you, this is a game that you can play poorly. And I, as a matter of fact, just the other night, I tried it against a couple of people in a playtest. I was like, I'm going to see how well this game will just drag me along. If I make suboptimal choices, will I finish sort of close? And the answer was no, I got housed, which is never a bad idea if you're a designer listening to this. Never a bad idea to lose at your own game, because then people like it more. if they win. That's just facts. And so it went pretty well, but it really is a pretty great game as far as just good strategic choices throughout. Wonderful ramp, because you can upgrade your actions so that, you know, if you, at first you're taking it and it's kind of moving along pretty slowly, but by the end of the game you take it and you're just storming through things and really getting those combos ramped up. So we're really proud of it.
I have kind of a two-pronged question, because you obviously your Motor City game works. So was this a game that you designed sort of earlier and the, you know, and the name came from that, and you just pushed it off because it was sort of a heavier game, or not?
Well, okay, so it is the eponymous game, right? Because it's Motor City from Motor City Gameworks. But it really was our second game that we had designed, because Matt and Ben had designed Three Sisters. And Motor City Gameworks was originally their company, and they were going to launch Three Sisters with that. There was some slowdown because of some COVID stuff and just different uncertainties that were there. I joined the team and bought into the company, and then we launched our Kickstarter within a few months so that we could sell that game for sure, because we really knew that it was a great game. And I, you know, I didn't need my name on the box in order for it to be a great game that I was willing to put my money behind and my energy into selling, because I think it's my favorite of y'all's in the Rollin' Right. I think it's beat Fleet Dice for me now. And I was the biggest Fleet Dice fan in the world, except maybe Chris Mosley, because he's your number one fan.
Number one fan.
I don't want to take out number one fan Chris Mosley, but I was right up there in the top two. But that game was amazing. But I knew Three Sisters was special, and so I was glad to be a part of that. Motor City came along. We wanted to make a game that was, like I said, more of a Euro, and we were toying around with a few things. I really love the game Newton. It's one of my top 10.
Yeah, it's a great game.
And I wanted to see if I could make a roll and write that was kind of like Newton in the way that that action selection mechanism works. Cause I love the way you play the cards and then you have to dump one card, and then that can sweeten other actions as you're going along. I love that whole mechanism. And so we tried to come up with something. I tried to design something similar to that, that wasn't just purely derivative. And I think we managed to do something like that with the upgradable actions. And then you can do them, and then it's blocked so that you can't take it again this round. So you have to kind of find ways to combo into things. So we were excited about that. And then we started talking about themes, and I guess our Detroit just started to show. We just fell in love with the idea of the auto industry and what that's meant to this city. And I don't know. We just started making it about home.
Yeah.
And we've been joking about that pun for years about the engine building game. We're like, hey, wouldn't it be funny to do a car game that's the engine builder? And I just wanted to throw out there, Adam, that the upgradable actions, you know, your inspiration from Newton, you know, it's clear when you explain it, but you did such a good job taking your original spin on it that I don't know that anyone's going to play Motor City and just be like, that feels like Newton. Like, I don't think people will just pull that out of thin air. Like, hey, is this Newton just in a Rollin' Right?
Yeah. Wait. Is that an annoying thing for you guys? It must be, like, from a design perspective, it must be kind of annoying when people do that, or like relate a game to something else.
It is funny that you say that. It's only annoying to me when, the general public or even a lot of the board game media must not understand like production timelines and how long it takes to make a project, because, you know, they'll say like, oh, this is clearly inspired by this other thing, you know, that might've come out like a month or a couple months earlier. And you're like, well, there's no way that the timelines would line up that this was inspired by that, because they're both have been in the pipeline for 2 years probably. So it's not like annoying, but it's kind of funny when people say like, oh, this is clearly inspired by, you know, this or that. And you're like, well, not really, because they both kind of been in the pipeline for 2 years, because that's how long it takes.
It's only annoying. I think it's only annoying when they compare it with a game that you really don't like. It's a game I think sucks. I really don't like it when they're like, this is just like that. And you're like, it is not. Because first off, that game's bad and only bad people play it. Like, I don't want that to be.
When these heavier roll and writes get compared to each other, I almost just feel like a proud dad. Not being like cocky or whatever, but I feel like Matt and I almost kind of reinvented or created this subgenre when we did Fleet Dice and we're like, no, it's going to be super thinky. It's a Euro game and there's two score sheets, you know, like we just, not one score sheet, but two. And then, so like when I go over to Adam's house and he pulls out Dinosaur Island Roar and Write and he gives me two score sheets and it's this heavy Euro amazing game that's a super great game. I feel like part of this fraternity, like of appreciators, like there's a lot of us that love this type of game, like Hadrian's Wall type of thing. Like, and not that everyone owes us credit, but I feel like we kind of made this subgenre. And anytime someone gives me two score sheets now and we play this Euro game, but with a pen, I just feel like this kinship. And I love that those other designers are doing it. It's really cool that it's kind of taken off as its own genre. And I just hope that other people keep making them too, because it only makes it more popular and expands the fan base for all of us.
And Fleet saved the genre for me. Like I was kind of done with Roll and Write. I didn't need it anymore in my life. And then Fleet the Dice Game dropped and all of a sudden I was like, wait, there's some legs on this. Like this can move and be exciting. This is interesting. I want more of this.
Yeah, I think I can relate to that actually, because I was very, you know, I was like a bit skeptical because Mitch was always banging the Fleet the Dice Game drum. Like you wouldn't believe it.
Attaboy, Mitch.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. But I was in the same space. And yeah, I agree. It definitely ratcheted it up a notch for me.
So I've been lucky enough. Matt sent me a copy of the Motor City prototype to have a try of and play. And I got to say, I really enjoyed it. But it definitely is different. And I wanted to ask, with Three Sisters and Fleet, Three Sisters was kind of like the spiritual successor of Fleet, and there's a lot of the same DNA there. Was it a conscious decision to move away from that, like on purpose? Because the way that I sort of would talk about Motor City, and we played it with Jules, one of our other hosts, and he said all the combos and stuff are still there, but they don't give them to you. You got to work for them. You've really got to make the effort to sort of build those combos yourself. Whereas in Three Sisters and Fleet, it's kind of like, yeah, you want another combo? Here's a combo. Have another one.
Right. People, you know. To quote Ben Pinchback's design promises, his axioms, here you go. People love free stuff. that's a Ben Pinchbeckism. People love free stuff, and so he's like, "You want another combo? Have another combo. We should put more combos in it because people like combos. They like free stuff, and so that makes it super fun." This one, I think, what you're noticing is probably my fault because I set out to make something that was, like I said, a full Euro game, Roll and Write is the mechanism, but it's not simply roll dice and cross off stuff. There's more to it than that. And I think there's more to it in actually Three Sisters as well, but it is a very different feel than what we've done up to this point. But we're also exploring new things as designers. Like we have two more games. One of them, French Quarter, which we don't know which one's going to be our next one after Motor City, to be honest, because we've got so many of these games that are really good and ready to go. We just know we don't have the time to make more than one in a year right now. And so French Quarter has a different puzzle to it, but has some things that you might say are more familiar and more look like the Three Sisters kind of thing. We've got a game called Durango that feels a whole lot more like Puerto Rico and kind of a sort of Euro-based game like that. And all of them are doing different things with the way you select your die, with the way that dice interacts with where your choices are. And so, I mean, it's fun to explore the space and the genre as well as designers. And so this is probably the product of, number one, me joining the team in terms of design. And then number two, just us exploring and growing as designers within the genre. Ben, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I think it's almost like you've given a bunch of kids, you know, a bunch of candy and a bunch of tools. And if the market didn't want Three Sisters, and if we did our Kickstarter and 500 people, you know, backed it, and we barely made our funding goal, and we barely broke even, and we struggled to produce and everything, we would have taken the hint, and maybe the company would have kind of went a different direction. And but when the response was so great, and you know, 3,000 backers, and everybody's, you know, really loving it, and the hunger is there for these types of games, and we found, you know, people love the quick setup. You know, you take the box out, give everybody a score sheet, and you start. So that's really cool. And we found the solo community has been a huge percentage of our players. Like, I mean, I'm just guessing, but 40%, 50% maybe of our players are solo players. And there is an appetite for these. So then there's that appetite, and we love making them. And to Adam's point, it's like, okay, so there's still a demand for them, but we're not going to do, you know, Fleet 2.0, Fleet 3.0. We're not going to do the same game every time. Now it's a challenge of, okay, this format is really popular. We're excited that it's popular. Now it's challenging. How can we reinvent it and keep it fresh and do it different? And what other genres of board game can we kind of re-implement with this roll and write footprint? You know, can we do, you know, detective noir game? Or, you know, it's kind of like, you remember what Scott Olms did with Tiny Epic? It's just when they got on that roll, he's like, you know, he did the Zelda, you know, type quest one, he did the zombie one, he did the western one, he got to explore all these different genres and feels because the market was there. And God willing, you know, people keep liking what we're doing, and we can keep expanding and doing different things and hopefully delivering. I think they're probably going to be combo-tastic in some way. Like you said, Mitch, though, it might feel different. Like in Three Sisters, we're just throwing dog, I put combos on your combos type of thing. Whereas in Motor City, you got to work for it. And you're feeling that Adam loves, you know, those super heavy, the heavier Euro games, you know, like your Zolkins, and, you know, all the ones, Adam, you have the whole shelf of them, right? Your Newtons and all those. And you're feeling that, yeah, whole shelf literally over his shoulder of him. You're feeling his influence there. So I guess we're just going to see where it takes us. But we love the combos. You can probably bank on, if it's a roll and write with us, it's going to be some combo-tastic in some way. For sure.
And if you need any more confirmation, Adam, that it's possible to not make the best decisions and do poorly, yes, I've many times.
All right.
But that, you know, that's what keeps bringing you back. And I say this, I've said this a lot. I'm a big solo gamer myself, and specifically with solo games, I'll say that's what you want in a game. You know, I think if you feel like you've mastered the game, or you know exactly what you want to do, and you can do that every time, then the desire to come back and do it again is sort of negated every time you play it. It's diminished a little bit. So, you know, having that where you go, okay, the first time I played Motor City, I was just had, you know, I don't even know if I scored points. I think my speedometer was the only place I got points from. And then, you know, going into it the second time, going, okay, now I need a plan going out. And it does have that Euro feel where you're like, thinking about this turn is not good enough. I need to think about this turn and the next turn and then the next turn after that, so that you can have that sort of plan going forward. And I know a lot of people in our community talk about games where, you know, you have that sort of two and three turns ahead planning in your mind. I felt like that's what this roll and write offers that maybe we haven't seen before in that genre. So yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, we found the
replayability. My favorite part of it right now.
Go ahead, Adam.
My favorite part of it right now is there's some Easter eggs in there for people to find, and that center a lot around the movie Office Space.
Oh, I love that movie.
And so there's stuff in there. Like, you'll notice even on the Kickstarter page where it's like, instead of just saying this is the people that make this game, it's you know, so here's our team, and then right underneath it is, so what would you say you do here? You know, it's right there. And so it's there's a lot of it, and we hope that y'all enjoy finding some office, but like all those little reports that you're supposed to get in order to make our TPS reports. There's some fun stuff.
Yeah.
It sounds very cool. Did you guys tell us the date? When does it come to?
March 9th.
March 9th.
March 9th.
Awesome. Soon.
It is. Really,
yeah, that's right. It happens quick. We were just talking about that, you know, with the global shipping kind of delays. We wanted to get Three Sisters to backers, you know, third or fourth quarter last year, but it ended up being first quarter of this year. We got everything shipped, you know, everybody got their package, the people that were missing their package, you rushed to do all that thing. And you kind of take this exhale of, all right, everybody, you know, got their game and they're liking it. And then you look at your watch and you're like, oh my gosh, we're launching another one in like 4 weeks. You know,
no rest of the weekend. Yeah. It went well, right? Three Sisters delivery and all that. Cause I did not hear any complaints. And there's so many like crazy delays and it seemed to all go pretty smoothly.
Well, right? I think for us in down here, down under, we were one of the first in the world to get it. So there were no complaints from our region, and I was definitely pumped.
Matt did such a good job. Matt is brilliant at handling logistics, brilliant. And in some ways, maybe he sees it like it's a Euro game itself, and he just stays on top of things so well. And he really did a great job making sure that all of our partners, whether it was the shipping company or the harbor or the distributors, everyone was just right on point. And he did such a good job following up. And so I really, most of the credit for that is due to Matt.
Mm. And some of the people in our Discord community actually commented on the great communication. I mean, Matt was pretty much putting out almost like weekly updates. It felt like weekly. And I think you guys spoke about it on one episode of your podcast as well, in terms of how important that communication is, you know, to backers, even if it's just saying, how's it going? We're still here and we're still pushing stuff along and, you know, won't be much longer, you know? So,
right.
People have already,
when we started the company, we really challenged ourselves. We said, we wonder what it would be like to, you know, back a game that people actually, that the publisher actually communicated well. You know, is it possible?
Yeah. Is it possible?
Because we're customers too. We buy a lot of games, obviously. And so, we were like, we should try this. And so one of our like hallmarks as a company is that we really want to over communicate if we can, that we want to be as transparent and as honest and as forthright and as, you know, communicate as regularly as possible. And what we've noticed is there's a couple of people who are like, okay, it's a little much. But by and large, people are like, man, this is awesome. We love it. Like, keep it going.
Well, yeah, if you're the type of person doesn't want that much, you can turn it off. There's no way to turn it on if the information's not coming.
That's right.
From your lips to God's ears, Mitch. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some cases, no news is good news. But with Kickstarter, it's not the case. No news is usually bad news. So you want to hear, even if it's like, there's nothing really to report this week. So.
That's right.
Okay. So I think with that, we'll probably move on to the next segment of our show. Which is the bracket battle.
Hey guys, it's Connor here from the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I just want to take a sec to talk to you about one of our sponsors, Advent Games. Dean and his team are an amazing bunch of people who run an incredible website that's heavily curated into different categories. You'll definitely find what you're looking for. With a $10 flat rate shipping all around Australia, you really can't go wrong. And if you enjoy coming to our game days, Dean and his team at Advent directly support the Sydney Game Day as well. So please, if you've got some spare time and some spare cash, go and check out adventgames.com.
So as we go into this bracket battle for this episode, we will be resolving the last battle, which was Pandemic Legacy versus Cartographers. So Adam and Ben, have you guys played either or both of these games?
Yes, sir.
They have.
I'm interested to see the results. I have opinions.
Yeah. I know you were talking about, you like the flipping over the card.
Yeah, we're ready. I'm interested in these results as well.
Yeah. Right, okay. Obviously, games that are easily compared to each other, Cartographers and Pandemic Legacy.
pretty much the same game.
Yeah, it's like we say, it's like ice cream and bicycles. So the winner in a very, very close contest, there was only one or two votes in it, was actually Pandemic Legacy.
Ooh.
Yeah, which was a surprise. So on our Facebook group, cartographers actually took out the win there, but in our Discord community, Pandemic Legacy was just slightly more ahead. So unfortunately for me, I put Cartographers in there as a bit of a flip and right, roll and right fan myself. Cartographers was my game, and it's now bowing out of the competition. But valiant effort from Cartographers, and Pandemic Legacy Season 1 will be moving on.
All right. Do well, you Ben, find that Cartographers well, is out. You can spill the beans now.
Well, it hurts. It burns. It stings. You know, I mentioned earlier, I feel the kinship and the brotherhood of the roll and write, flip and write, and nothing against Pandemic Legacy. Phenomenal. Obviously, I mean, what is it? Number two still on Board Game Geek. Like, it deserves everything. It deserves everything it got. But I got to go with the flipping right, rolling right. I mean, Cartographers is genius. It's a blast. Everybody in my family and friend group loves it. You can teach it in 5 minutes. I mean, it's everything that's great about, you know, Rando and Wright. So clearly that would have been my choice. So it burns. Mm. It burns that it got knocked out.
I'm feeling you.
Here's the deal. Mitch and Ben, I love you guys. But here's the reality. I have played and taught both of these games. They're great, but I have played and taught Cartographers specifically to several different groups. We play it. Everyone says they enjoy it, but no one ever says, let's play again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's been my personal experience. Mm. Whereas other games, like when you finish that first game of, say, Hadrian's Wall, people go, okay, now I get it. I want to do it again. Run it again. And that's way harder than Cartographers.
Yeah,
but you know, even Silver and Gold, people say that was super fun. Let's play again. Mm. I've never had anyone ask for a second run of Cartographers.
I had the worst. That out there. I had like the worst experience of Cartographers the first time I played it because it was at a game night, and this guy that was teaching it, like, he had the best of intentions. He wanted everyone to join in. It was wonderful, but he kept starting to explain the game again and like inviting more people, like, because someone else might come along and then he'd be like, join us. And then he'd start the teach again. And I swear we'd restarted the teach again like six times or something. And I'm sitting there like, this has been like half an hour now. Like, this is crazy. And we haven't started. And now I know the rules, except for like the one last rule that we haven't got to yet, because every time we are almost there. Someone... Yeah, it was so funny. It was so funny.
That's a bad experience.
Yeah, and I think it ended up there was like 12 of us or something, which was like, that's a big fun group, right?
It is.
It ended up so taking so long, the whole thing. So
now imagine if that would have happened to you at Pandemic Legacy.
Oh wow, that would have been like a whole weekend. Yeah,
you get halfway through and he's like, "Oh, come on in, we'll start over. We're just starting.
Let's go.
We've made it to June, but let's just go back to January.
Come on in. Yeah, just rejoin us."
Yeah.
All right. So Pandemic Legacy will move on. I don't know who we'll be taking on in the next round, but we'll find out when we get to that. And then our next bracket battle that we're going to be discussing this week, that will be available after this episode goes live for everyone to vote on our Facebook community and Discord and Instagram, is the Battle of the Gateways, I'm going to call it, which is Lords of Waterdeep versus the behemoth that is Wingspan. So everybody's nodding their heads in agreement here, and I think all of us have probably played all these games. So I'll go to you first, Sarah. What do you think, Wingspan or Lords of Waterdeep?
I'm on the Lords of Waterdeep bandwagon here because I actually haven't played it that many times in person, but I had a lot of fun with this game on the app, and I had both expansions. I know this is, I don't know if it's cheating to talk about the expansions, but the Scoundrels of Skullport expansion is so good because you're just constantly dealing with this corruption that you're not sure if you can get rid of it and stuff like that and how bad it's going to be for you. So I found it a really exciting like worker placement game. I really enjoyed it. I really liked the puzzle of you have these different quests and you look at the rewards you're going to get for each of the quests, and you can see that, oh, if I do this one first, I'm going to get the thing I need for this other quest. And you can kind of work out, you know, like this you know, a good order to do them in so that you can keep the rewards and quests getting fulfilled. And so I think it's cool. I think it's cool to play with, like you said, as a sort of a more beginner level game because it's not super heavy. But I think it's crunchy enough like to be enjoyable, and I really enjoyed that solo. I liked cranking up the AI to hard, and there's also, you know, you're like have a different lord and they're going for certain things, so you're trying to prioritize what they're going to give you points for. Then there's all the backstabbing with the intrigue cards. It's kind of got a bit of everything. I gotta say I'm going for that one because, well, Wingspan is up against, like, as a tableau builder, there's a lot of good tableau builders. I'm a huge like Race of the Galaxy person.
But it's not up against Race of the Galaxy.
But when I played Wingspan, I was
keep it on track.
There's a good pedigree there. I don't know. I just don't know if it stands up against the classics. That's all I'm saying. So my vote's for Lords of Waterdeep.
How about you guys? Which way would you go on this one?
I appreciate that you almost made me think Lords of Waterdeep was the one that I should go with
here. almost
got me thinking there and second guessing myself, but I'm going to actually go with Wingspan. I think that Wingspan is a spectacular game. Elizabeth Hargrave did such a good job of making the ramp in that game so organic by taking away actions each round, but having those actions affect all of the birds in each section. So that you get less actions, but they get better as the game goes on, is such an ingenious push-pull. And the way that the whole, I love the way the habitats function. It is clear and easy to teach and understand. I love it as a gateway. I love the theme, super unique, as opposed to kind of generic D&D-esque. Sort of realm. I don't know. It's that weird battle realm that all like Euros are in. As for Lords of Waterdeep, and this is more of the, you know, Wingspan, I think, is just outside the box a little bit enough in terms of theme and the way that it approaches it. Really love it. So I don't know. I'm going to go with Wingspan. And even though Wingspan may have to face, Race for the Galaxy at some point.
I hope so. That'll be a showdown.
I'm still going Wingspan on this one.
Okay.
I do love Lords of Waterdeep as intro to worker placement. It is a great gateway to teach people what worker placement games are like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Ben, are you going to be the tiebreaker here?
Well, so this pains me. Is a fellow bird lover and bird board game creator. Like Matt and I made the game Peat Motts. That literally came from me staring at my bird feeder and watching birds jostle at the feeder and just doing dishes, watching that and just loving that. And then Wingspan came out in the same year and loved it. Super produced well, great art. I loved the fact that nature themes got such traction, like Adam said, versus kind of the boring paste on, hey, the orange cube is the archer or whatever it is, like pretty pasted on, you know?
Yeah, I admit that.
Sure. But all that said, it's kind of, so this makes me feel old, by the way, that Lords of Waterdeep is a classic because it came out the first year Matt and I were in the industry, the year Fleet launched, which was 2012. So that makes me feel super old that the year we entered the industry, the game is now a classic, but it is a classic. And it's probably the best, for my money, medium weight intro worker placement game. You know, take away the fact that it's got a D&D theme on it. You can teach this game to anybody and they'll love it and have a great time because it's so well designed. And play it with anybody. Wingspan, you know, love the theme, love the product. I think it's an A++ product. The gameplay for me was maybe, you know, B+. It was good. I didn't super fall in love with it, but Lords of Waterdeep, I just think for what it is, you know, it's been 10 years. It's still a top 100 overall game on BGG, and it's there for a reason because it's one of the best medium to medium low complexity work placement games. Great for the hobby, and I just love everything it did, and it is still great. So Lords of Waterdeep for me.
Okay, there you go. I think I would. I don't know. I find it really hard to split, and I'm probably going to balance the ledger here, and I'm going to go towards the Wingspan.
Yes,
That's why you went last. You were just sitting on the fence until.
That's right.
Yeah. Adam said he loves me. I've got to go with Adam. So you know.
That's exactly right.
So, but look, it's a tight race, and I think. If I had to predict who will win this, I think maybe Wingspan, just because it's got the popularity thing. It's a bit newer, maybe, and some people have dropped off the Lords Awarded it. But I don't think that's an actual representation of where these games are, because I think they really are tight in terms of what they offer and the pros and cons that they both have. But I'm going to give the edge to Wingspan because it's got a really cool solo mode, which I play a lot. And it's a pretty seamless AI. It's challenging, and there's options there. So you know, when you can't get a group around the table, you can always still play that game. And let's not forget the Oceania expansion that they added, which throws in all those awesome Australian birds, or Australasian and Oceanic birds as well, including our favorite, the bin chicken. Have you guys heard of the bin chicken?
Now I got to look it up. But-
I do. It's right up there on my shelf. There is the expansion. And
the bird is called the ibis, and it's commonly known around Australia for being a bird that goes through the trash everywhere. So it's been colloquially named the bin chicken. And it's awesome because in the game, its power allows you to go through the discard pile.
Oh, that's so good.
See?
So good.
Exactly. It's brilliant. So when you get the next time you play the Oceania expansion, have a look for the bin chicken.
And so great.
All right. So that'll be up on our socials to vote for. It'll be Wingspan versus Lords of Waterdeep. So make sure you get out there and vote for your favorite to see it go through to the next round. And with that, we'll move on to our next segment, which will be Swearing of an Oath. Now is probably a good time to remind everybody of ways that you can support our podcast. Even something as small as leaving us a review on your app of your choice, knowing that Dan will read out on the show any 5-star reviews we get. You can join the Board Game Barbecue community on Facebook, or join our Discord community to chat with like-minded gamers, or even meet up and play games online. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you still want more Board Game Barbecue, you can go to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue and become a subscriber, which will give you access to additional exclusive content that we create just for our Patreon members. We all thank you for your support, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the show. So, swearing an oath, this is a segment that we do every show where we make a commitment to do something within the board gaming hobby, whether it be to play a game we haven't played, to get a high score at a game that we enjoy, to teach someone new a game and try and get them into the hobby, or anything else that you can possibly imagine. Do you guys want to participate in this as well with us?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. So what we'll do, we'll start off with Sarah, because she's probably got one hanging over that she was required to do since she was on last time. How'd you go with your oath, Sarah?
The way you said that, she was required to do it. This has been this has been really embarrassing lately, because we went from like 2 episodes per week, and now we only do 1 episode per week, and we've gotten way worse at completing our oaths.
We've doubled the amount of time we're giving ourselves, and we're performing worse.
Correct. And I'm not going to disappoint anyone when I say that you can't expect any more from me this week, because I didn't do my oath either. But I also want to say this. We've been doing this thing where we keep on roping each other in for oaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, that's not working, because I tried to teach Adrian Eclipse. That was my oath. And I was like practically begging him, because he's like, oh, let's do this on Patreon podcast. And we're like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. We'll do that. And then afterwards we will, I'll teach you Eclipse and that. And then he's like, no, I'm tired. I've got to work tomorrow. I'm like, no, dude, this is my oath. You can't do this to me. So yeah, so I'm going to blame it on
Adrian.
What
you're saying is you're blaming Adrian.
Yeah.
For your
I think everyone is to blame. Everyone in the podcast is to blame for me not doing this oath, because
I didn't do
all
thing.
Got worse.
Hold on. I didn't do a thing.
No, you guys. You guys are okay. You guys are okay. But all the Board Game Barbecue people are on the hook, because, first of all, we can't help each other with our oaths. we're failing at each other, and we're also doing way less than we did before.
I'm sure Adrian would have helped you out if his internet was up to the task.
God, yeah. So we have to double down because that's what we do. So I have to teach Adrian Eclipse, and I swear to God, I will record I will record this and just send him a video if he doesn't turn up because I want to get it done. So teach Eclipse. And then another one I wanted to do again was actually play solo, which I know is usually Mitch's thing and it's not my thing, but I've been enjoying Arkwright the card game quite a bit. And my friend borrowed it for a while and she was playing it solo and she was like, oh, it is so good solo. And I only played it one solo and I actually really liked it. So I'm going to try it again. So I want to get it to the table again so I can talk about it. I'd like to talk about it on the show. And both, you know, show this how it goes solo as well as with other players because it's a really cool game. I like it a lot. So that's going to be my new oath.
Okay. Arkwright the card game solo.
Yep.
All right. We'll see how we go. Okay. I'm going to throw over to Adam now. What oath would you like to make, Adam?
All right. So here's my oath. Some of my favorite designers, I love Kiesling Kramer. Okay. I love their stuff. I have owned the game Reworld for over a year and have not played it.
Right.
So my oath that I'm swearing to you is that I am going to play Reworld within the next week.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I will make it hit the table within the next week.
Okay. Nice. And hashtag oath fulfilled.
Oath fulfilled is coming your way.
Alrighty. Awesome. Alrighty. We'll hold you to that. How about you, Ben?
Adam, I'm waiting for that call, by the way. I'm willing Absolutely. For you to teach that to me.
100%.
All right. So I have
get a snowplow out and you can head over.
Oh my gosh, you're not kidding. I have a self-serving one that is gonna complete a really long journey for me. So this is a long story to say my oath. But about 6+ years ago, I started designing this game called Legends of Sleepy Hollow. And I showed it to Matt and he got excited about it. And I showed it to Chris Kirkman at a con and he goes, we're going to do that game. So like that was a long time ago. Like I didn't have gray in my beard, I think, when I started designing that game. So fast forward 6-7 years, you know, we sold it to Greater Than Games. We kickstarted it. We did it. Production was slower than we wanted it to be for whatever reasons on the company side over there. We got it ready to print, and then the management at the company decided they wanted to rework some things. So they took another year or two to develop and change things. So kind of what happened was the bones and what I designed is still there, but I honestly, between the four of us and the listeners, I don't know everything they changed because they kind of took it over and decided they wanted to change some things 2 years ago. So it's showing up soon and I know it's still my game, but I honestly don't know what the final product, you know, what changes they made or whatever, but I do know I have 3 12-year-olds. And it's a 4-player game. So my oath is the four of us are going to unbox it like brand new gamers. And we're just going to go through the campaign together and have a blast with it. So I can't wait to do that. That's my oath.
Excellent.
That's awesome. And that for several years was shipping in August.
Yeah, right.
they didn't specify which year.
But it was always shipping in August. Yeah. And it did that for 3 years.
It got to the point where this last couple of weeks, backers are like, oh my gosh, the game showed up. I didn't think that was actually going to happen. Sweet, I got a game. So whatever.
So have you actually got your copy already, Ben?
It's en route. It'll be showing up this week. It's en route. Right, and we're literally just going to unbox it and play it and see what made the cut, see what got changed, and enjoy it the whole time. That's the plan.
Yeah, all right. Cool. All right, so that leaves me then. And my oath, it's kind of funny because I kind of forget what my oath was. But I think it was to play the solo mode of the new Great Western Trail 2nd Edition. Or as we say on this podcast, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, Great Western Trail.
I've taught that game wrong so many times.
Like, well, I actually just found out recently that I've been playing it wrong for like forever as well.
Yeah,
I don't know that I've ever played the game correctly. Like, there's always one more rule I've gotten wrong. I've played it like 20 times. I'm not sure I've gotten it right yet. Love it.
It's part of the fun of the discovery, you know. It's fine.
Yeah.
as long as you're liking it.
So that was my oath. I got the second edition. It's amazing. It's fantastic. As much as I loved the other version, I think it was number 3 of my favorite all-time games. It's definitely secured its spot there now with the new edition, with all the upgraded components, the dual-layer boards. Oh, it's just so sweet. But with the additional solo mode as well, which I did play, I think it was based on they make a reference in the manual to saying that it was primarily built from the fan-built version that was on BGG. So that was where it started, and they built it from there, which is really good. So credit to those that did that. And it's fantastic. It might be one of the better solo for a big Euro game like that. You know, usually it's not uncommon for the solo AI to be really overbearing and quite cumbersome in terms of taking their turn. And there's nothing more that I dislike than having to spend 25 minutes taking the AI's turn when it only takes me 2 minutes to take mine. So I was very, very pleased to find out that the AI management is so smooth and simple. It starts off with one part that I found was really cool. It starts off with for those that know the game, you have the 3 different types of workers that you can get on, and you generally tend to try and focus on one of those strategies as you play through. The AI will start with a preference, and that's, you know, be it trains or cowboys or the engineers, and that will be the factor in terms of what decisions it makes and which actions it takes on its turn. But it also has a mechanism that will allow it to switch mid-game if one of the other items becomes sort of more favorable for it to change track and go down one of the other routes. So it's really, really cool in that regard. Yeah. Very, very smooth. I will be playing this game so much more now because it has that mode in it. So that was an absolute tick for me. Fantastic. The solo mode.
Did Fester design the solo mode, or was that someone else who came and helped him?
I don't know if he did a little bit of it. It just the only design notes that they have in the book is to say that it was built from the guys that I'll just pull it out real quick.
That's cool.
So it only credits Fester on the box, but in the rules it says this solo mode is based on Garth, a variant created by Steve Schlepphorst with the help of Will Gherkin and David Lavoie.
Huh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's the only sort of reference that it's got in there. So whether or not he contributed to that, or maybe the publishers just got the other guys in to build it around that, I'm not entirely sure.
You got to love how much fans get into board games, that they put this stuff out there, and a lot of it is like really top-notch. Like the campaign version for Mage Knight, I've played a co-op scenario for Eclipse. Like there's just such good stuff on BGG. So it wouldn't surprise me if it just came from fans.
Yeah. But they've done an amazing job. It's brilliant. Yeah, as I said, for a game that size, that heavy, one of the smoothest AI opponents that I think I've probably ever played. So, yeah, really, really good.
That's awesome.
So what to do next is the big question. I've just had a total mental blank on what my next oath was going to be.
You're going to forget it anyway.
Probably. I'll just forget it by next time we're on, and I'll just make it up on the spot.
just play something and then say next time it was yours.
That's right.
I'll throw one out there. I'll throw it out there with the knowledge that I'm probably not going to get this done, but it's been hanging over my head for a long time. It's
you
been
can't
that,
say that. Like, you got it. Like, it's not a lie, right? If you believe it. Like, it's you been, can't say,
yeah, see, you can't this say is how,
like, I'm not going to do this, but here's my oath.
Well, I'm going to try.
Lately. That's
and I've mentioned it to Sarah before because she may need to assist me with it. Maybe not. We'll see how we go. But I've had a game on my shelf also, Adam, like yourself, for probably more than a year now that I haven't played. It scared me off because of the size of it and the mainly the wording and the jargon used in it. That I've heard makes it really difficult to learn the game, and that is Mind Clash's Cerebria. So I haven't played that. It's been sitting there taunting me for years. But I'd really like to get it to table and get it played. So I'll make that my oath before I'm on the podcast next.
Have you liked the other stuff by Mind Clash?
I wasn't a huge fan of Anachrony. I liked it enough to play it. We're not going to rush back to play it again and again. Like I know some people love it. Tricarion is also pretty good.
Okay. Then you'll probably like this one as well.
Yeah. And so you've played Cerebria?
It's going to be worth it for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Fight through it. It's neat. It's a really cool design.
No worries. Have you tried it solo?
No.
Right.
I don't do a whole lot of solo gaming.
Yeah.
But I've played it. It's a fun game. I like the ideas behind the design.
Yeah.
Like a lot. I think that's really cool space.
Yeah.
So enjoy it.
Excellent. No worries. That's good. That's giving me some motivation to get it out then and get it done.
And if you don't get it done, blame Adam.
Yeah. I didn't absolutely do anything.
If I don't get it done, I'll eat 10 Spumoni cookies.
Now that's punishment.
That's reason to not get it done right there.
That's some serious penance right there. It'll be easy to find because there's plenty left over from the holidays. That was funny.
Because they're at the cookie table, not the cheesecake table.
Listen, that's where you'll find them. Those frosted flake green wreaths are cookies. All day that's a cookie.
No, that's like saying that a Rice Krispie treat's a cookie, Ben.
It's a cookie. It's a cookie.
You know, there are some blurred lines. I know, like, there's a Jaffa cake in the UK. I don't know if you guys heard this, but they, like, were saying they're going to be a cake because they pay less tax if they're a cake or something like that than they would if they're a cookie. Yeah.
That's so good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but they're pretty revolting as well, Jaffa cakes.
I grew up on Jaffa cakes.
So did you? Yeah. You did the orange and chocolate thing mixed? I don't know.
I love orange and chocolate.
It's totally a cookie. Totally a cookie.
It's definitely a cookie. It's even in a, like,
a cookie. You would say anything's a cookie if it's going to help your argument right now, Ben. You don't know what a Jaffa cake is.
Like, you don't know what a cookie is.
It's that orange and chocolate circle thingy. Yeah, sure, I know what it is. Just, it's totally a cookie.
Yeah. By the way, my third cookie was orange and chocolate. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
you
know, right.
It was ricotta cheese and chocolate, you goofball. That's why it was gross.
That's orange. It was ricotta cheese, orange, and
nobody
are you thinking
was
about a different kind of cheese?
Nobody ricotta was mad at you about
cookies.
Nobody was mad at you about the orange and the chocolate. You're just combining lasagna with cookie, and I'm like, get out of here.
See, you don't even know what you're talking about.
I feel like Ben just thinks everything that's circular is a cookie. Like,
yeah.
If it's circular and on the cookie tray, and on the cookie tray, then it's a cookie.
If it was a risol patty,
yeah. Meat cookie. Meat cookie.
Meat cookie.
If we would all be so lucky.
That are looking for a band name, Meat Cookie is meat pretty meat strong.
It is. That's great. That's good.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, that actually brings us to the end of the show. As much as I'd love to stay on all day and talk about cookies and what the perfect temperature of a poached egg was.
that's our space.
Yeah, we do have to wrap it up. So I just take the time to say thank you so much to Adam and Ben for joining us today. It's been absolutely fantastic, and you're more than welcome to come back on whenever you please.
Absolutely. Sounds fun. Ben, thanks,
Sarah,
for having
us. Thank you so much. It was a blast. In the couple minutes, you know, we got of Adrian, we really enjoyed, but let's be honest, the real treat was talking to the two of you. So everything worked out.
Right here.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. And yes, everyone check out Motor City Games.
March 9th.
March 9th. And also the podcast as well, because it's a riot.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, and we will see you all next time.
Thanks. Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Are you going to ask
a question? That was not the strongest start.
You said so, guys, and then stopped. Did you actually ask a question? It didn't look like you said anything.
I thought it was a really dramatic pause. All right.
Or in my word, I was about to be like, Ben, see, I'm not the only one who takes long pauses.
That was this an Adam Hill pause.
This guy just paused for 15 seconds.
What's going on with your internet today?
Bye, Adrian.
And he's gone. You did that, I swear.
Poor Adrian.
Oh, dear. All right, so we'll just get back into it. So,
Dan can edit this out.